Thank you and good morning, committee members. Agenda paper 4 addresses capitalization of borrowing costs in relation to the construction of a residential multi-unit real estate development. In the particular fact pattern, the real estate developer recognizes revenue over time for the sale of the individual units. Paragraph 5 outlines the fact pattern described in the request. We conducted outreach on this matter. Paragraphs 12 to 16 summarize our findings. Paragraphs 17 to 37 present our analysis of how an entity determines whether borrowing costs are eligible for capitalization in this particular fact pattern. And our conclusions are summarized in paragraphs 38 and 39 of the paper. In our view, in the fact pattern described in the submission, borrowing costs are not eligible for capitalization because any asset recognized is not a qualifying asset. I would like to draw your attention to question 1 on page 11 and ask if you agree with our analysis of the requirements of IAS 22.
And a really important fact in the fact pattern, as I understand it, is the conclusion that the entity has reached that they're in an overtime revenue recognition scenario.
Yeah, and for all of the units in this building, they're in that scenario.
All right, Mary?
I guess if the question has been received, the committee addresses it. I guess just based on some of our previous discussions around the revenue side of the question, it may be a bit of a discussion about a unicorn, but, a very rare circumstance. But I think, again, background of having received it, talking about the interaction with IAS 23 makes sense, especially I still have some very old scars about some old comments that used to be in IAS 11 that got a lot of attention when IFRIC 12 was developed, that may be the genesis of some of these questions.
So to unpick the code a little bit, your reference to a unicorn is the fact that we've got a situation where in a multi-unit construction you've got revenue recognition over time, which hasn't typically been in the outcome of some of our recent discussions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Common in some places.
Yeah, very.
All right. Who wants to talk about IAS 23? Come on.
Oh, all right, then. I will have a go.
I agree with the staff analysis and the conclusions that have been reached. The point that I did want to raise is, in fact, one that I'm getting back in feedback on the converse, which is where revenue is not recognised over time. And I've been pleased to hear that people have been reading the paper very closely, because I've had a number of people contact me and say, look at paragraph 37. And the reason for that is that some people appear to be reading paragraph 37 to say that you must not just have your sale at a particular point in the future, but also your marketing activities. So although that's not how I read it, I would perhaps just put that down as a note that perhaps we need to be quite careful in what we say in the agenda decision itself, to make it quite clear that because this is over time, at the point at which you get a sale, you have an immediate catch-up for the transfer at that point, and that's why you fail under IAS 23 when you're in the overtime model. Whether we need explicitly to say that that wouldn't apply if it was point in time, I'm not sure. But it's just to make it absolutely clear that it's only when you're in an overtime model that this analysis would apply.
Yeah. And maybe just to chip in, Andrew reminds me, when I was travelling last week, a few people had read this paper and were a bit excited about it because they seemed to be reading it in a way that would imply that, to use their words, anything can be for sale. So, you know, I can be building something and have no plan to sell it, if you like, but if somebody sees it from the street and decides they like it and come and make an offer that I can't resist, I might decide to sell it even though that had never been my plan. And so, because in theory that could always happen, does that mean you can never capitalise interest under IAS 23? And I think it was very, going back and looking at the paper and thinking, oh my God, is that what it says? That wasn't how I read it, because it was very clear that you needed to sort of, business model's not the word, but you're sort of modus operandi needs to be that your intention, I'm not sure what the right word is that you are looking for sale along the way. It is a very particular type of fact pattern that we're looking at.
I think that's right. And if there were any way we could bring out that the focus is on the point at which there is an IFRS 15 transfer of control, because my sense is that the misunderstanding is it's the point at which you agree a sale that people are starting to focus on. And in my mind, that's not the important point. It's the point at which you actually transfer the underlying asset to the customer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tony.
So I agree with the analysis in the circumstances that we have. I agree with some of the things that Andrew said. I don't think that it's marketing that's relevant here. I think the key thing is that the intention is to sell under a contract that will give rise to revenue over time. And therefore, the asset is ready for its intended use, because if someone comes in and buys it tomorrow, the inventory balance will be in cost of sales. And as Andrew said, the TRG confirmed that there is a catch-up adjustment to revenue at that point. So I think where the intention is to sell into using a contract that revenue will be recognized over time, I think this is the correct answer. I think there is a tension that I don't propose that we address, which is what happens where you don't know what the contract will say. You might end up selling it, using a contract that recognises revenue over time. You might end up with a different contract. And there, I think there would have to be a judgment, but I don't propose that we go into that. My only other comment on the tentative agenda decision is whether we need to include the final paragraph, actually the second paragraph B, in the tentative decision, whether we actually need to address the inventory of raw materials or whether we could just focus on the question that we were asked about the inventory of unsold units.
Carl?
Yes, thanks. I agree with staff's analysis and conclusion, but I would like to understand, I know it's not the fact pattern, but the exact consequence what the accounting triggers of IAS 23 if the fact pattern was a point-in-time revenue recognition. Because some of the arguments you used in this case, I wasn't sure if the consequence would be the same if the point-in-time revenue recognition was the case. Can you clarify that, please?
I suppose I think that... Let's assume this is a contract where that you know when you enter into it that transfer of control will only happen to the customer at a point in time when the whole unit or possibly even the whole building is complete. If that's the case, because your assessment of qualifying asset here is to look at what's the quote, is that it's an asset that necessarily takes a substantial period of time to get ready for its intended sale. So in that case, it is an intended sale. The point is, though, you're only going to actually sell it, transfer control, at a point in time when it's complete. And therefore, if you assess that at the start, it will necessarily take a substantial period of time to actually complete construction, then in that case, potentially it is a qualifying asset, and then subject to the other requirements in IAS 23, you could capitalize borrowing costs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And I agree with Tony's comments. I also was a bit troubled with the second to last paragraph. I'm not sure if it's necessary to include it, and might bring some additional polemic, unnecessary polemic.
Thanks, Carl. Young Su?
I want to concur with the others in that this agenda decision should be specifically say that the all we discussed in the agenda decision is restricted only to the case when the revenue is recognized over time. If we apply to other situations, like the revenue is recognized at a point, like recognize the revenue after completed, when the construction is complete, we're going to get to a very different conclusion. So we have specifically said that this is restricted only to the case when the revenue is recognized over time. And the other one, I think the other people also say that, but for the management intention, I think we have to say something about substantive. The management intention should be substantive. What I meant is that, you know, sometimes if we say just management intention, the entity or the management might say that they intend to sell the asset even though there is no market at all, even though market doesn't exist, and even though the entity cannot sell the asset in the market. If the management just say they intend to sell it, you know, the capitalization of interest is going to be dependent upon just the management intention, even though it is not substantive. So somewhere in the decision, we have to say something about management intention should be substantive. I mean, management should be able to sell in the market with their intentions.
Jim?
I'm also confused with the wording on paragraphs 31 and 37 about the entity's marketing activities. I think I agree with this, most of the staff analysis, until I see the marketing activities get involved. I don't think it should be defined like this. If to make this whole agenda decision true, the way I understand is that these activities should be the revenue activity, or should be defined as the IFRS 15 revenue. Otherwise, we know all these companies or developers will market their buildings and units at any point of time, way even before the whole building get built, and or some of them get sold. So the marketing activity should be should not be mentioned here, or we should redefine it as the revenue that fit into our first 15 category or definition, so that the whole analysis should be about right. Otherwise, these two words really confuse me with these the management intention or their marketing activity and the accounting results. So I think something should be changed here.
Is your concern that whether or not you had marketing activities going on might...
It doesn't tell us the status of the building itself, the contract signed or yet signed with customers, or the control or obligation on both sides. The marketing activity, just a piece of paper or a TV commercial that will satisfy the marketing activity.
Oh, that's what I meant by substantive.
Yeah.
Marketing is sometimes mm-hmm. cannot be substantive. It's just marketing.
Yeah.
But they should be able to sell in the market.
Yeah, there's just one thing I want to add. So the reason we put marketing in the paper is, one, it was part of the fact pattern that the entity is actively marketing the unit. Mm-hmm. And that to us told us that they do intend to enter into contracts as soon as they can find customers. Mm-hmm. Because there could also be situations when the entity is just building a building the unit, mm-hmm. but they don't intend to enter into contracts, mm-hmm. or they'll just wait until construction reaches a certain point in time before they start looking for customers. So I think it was just important to point out that they are actively looking and they will enter into contracts at any point in time.
So you saw it as a piece of evidence that helped make the assessment of whether there was an intention to sell.
It's just part of the evidence. I think this on the management side, they intend to sell. But we don't know, and we will never know when they will find the customer or if any customer would buy the rest of the unsold units. It may take years. So that's just some information should be considered, but by this information alone, it should not support the result.
But just to be clear, even if your intention was to sell, even if it might take years to sell, that wouldn't change the analysis in here?
No, that wouldn't.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Mary?
Well, I was just going to make a suggestion thinking about people's concerns with having a discussion about marketing activity, and maybe in paragraph D, but more fundamentally in the analysis, the point is that the item that the entity is seeking to sell is the incomplete unit. So it's what's the product, because that is what it is that links more directly to the. Does it take a period of time I'm massacring the words of IS 23, to be ready for its intended use. The point isn't the marketing activities. The point is that the item for sale is the incomplete unit rather than the completed unit. So maybe the focus on that would help, Jim.
Yeah.
The fact that you're marketing something that...
The fact that the item you're seeking to sell through,
As opposed to the complete item.
Right.
Bob.
I agree with the staff analysis, and my thoughts were very similar to Tony's. I didn't think he said something very important. It's the intention to enter into contracts that will be meet the criteria for overtime. And so I think we need to build that into the tentative agenda decision in the first page in item E and on the second page in item C. Because it also caused me to wonder about this intention. And I think in this example where it's a multi-unit development and they've already have contracts that they for units that they sold that meet the criteria for overtime, it's okay to assume that the others will meet the condition for overtime. But I'm wondering about a single building where they are marketing immediately, they are planning to sell it, but they don't know whether the contract that's going to be negotiated in the future will meet the criteria for overtime or at a point in time. Now, I assume because they're marketing it, they intend to sell it, I assume they have an intention for that contract, which I think is how I would account for it, and in fitting into this agenda decision. But that... My views there may go beyond what we're trying to do in this agenda decision and this and answering the submission that was explicitly asked.
Okay. Martin?
Yeah, similar view. I mean, I don't know whether we really need to say that the company has started to do the marketing. I guess, and that would also be in line with the fact pattern. There is a market with reasonable transactions probably, and management has decided to sell and not to use the property for rental income. And then it's pretty clear, I guess.
Thanks, Sue. I'm kind of half-half in terms of where we got to on this agenda session. I mean, I agree on the receivable and the contract asset. I got no problem with that. I had the same concern, and interestingly, having discussions, had the same concerns you did around the marketing. The people expressed to you that they're saying, well, all I'd need to do is stick a for sale sign somewhere, and I could get out of it. All my concern being, well, as you were saying, anything could be purchased. I mean, I could walk in and want to buy anything. And my worry is that IS 23 envisages inventory can definitely be a qualifying asset. I mean, it's explicit about that, so I'm not, we're not disputing that. My worry is that we're saying, well, hang on, if for any reason you're prepared, somebody walks in and makes a reasonable offer, you're prepared to sell it, that gets you out of there. I'm not convinced I would have made that leap. I think it's quite a big leap to have made. The other one, just I had the same comment around the capitalization, we talk about the raw materials and things. I just don't think we got enough facts around the raw materials. I mean, my concern is that we've seen situations where in order to get things going, you've had to pre-order raw materials because the lead times are so long. For example, in some of the East African countries and that, where people have to ship things up and it can take 3 months to get goods there. There can be situations where we have to pre-buy the raw materials and that as part of the entire process. So I just would be very worried that we're making a broad sweeping statement here that you cannot do it. I think there are arguments that could be built around that. So.
Bruce, just to say though on that one, I'm not saying that means we need to keep it, but obviously just we totally get that some people, have to or for economic reasons buy raw materials well in advance of, say, using them. The point in IS 23 we were making is that IS 23 only allows you to capitalise borrowing costs if you're actively doing something with the assets. So even if you buy in advance, that doesn't mean you can capitalise.
I'm not disputing what you. I agree with you. All I'm saying is, I hate to use that facts and circumstances again, but I'm saying that there are. I'm just worried that that's a very sweeping statement that we're making, and I think we've got to just be very careful that, because the next question will be, what is the degree of activity that would now allow me to start doing it? And I worry we're going to start.
Might not need it to answer the question.
Yeah, I don't even need it.
Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis. I had not read the agenda the way most committee done. I think the way I read it and the way most people read it in France was mostly the saying that we were saying there, when you account for revenue over time, you don't capitalize borrowing costs generally. And I think it's a fair statement to mention. Even though I understand that there might be certain situations whereby it could be nuanced, but overall, if it's what we stayed there, I agree with that.
All right. Okay. I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. And I think that these unsold units are, you know, the if it is you know, completed or incomplete, that clearly the management has an intention to sell them, but still the customers are not specified. And therefore, you know, that it is ready to sell, and also that the customers are not specified. So I think that it is not applicable to that the revenue recognition over time. So that it might be very difficult for us to justify to capitalize borrowing cost.
Guy?
Maybe picking up on, some of the points around marketing. Paragraph 37 of the paper also caused me a bit of pause, and maybe this is beyond what the agenda decision is saying, but in paragraph 37, it says, it talks about not marketing currently, but only at a particular point in the future, and it's suggesting that in that case, you might come to a conclusion that it is a qualifying asset. But it strikes me that there's a fair amount of judgment involved in that situation. So, you know, if my decision was not to market currently because I felt, you know, pricing was depressed and it might rebound, you know, in a year or something, I don't think that circumstance would enable me to start capitalizing interest necessarily. So I think there are, you know, a host of circumstances alluded to in 37 that would require some considerable judgment in determining whether there is a qualifying asset or not. And so, you know, I'm not sure that's fully captured in the thought process in paragraph 37 in the paper. That being said, in the tentative agenda decision, you know, the facts seem quite explicit in terms of what's going on, and I can easily come to a conclusion, I think, in that fact pattern that it's not a qualifying asset. So that's more a comment about paragraph 37 than the agenda decision itself.
So maybe we're putting too much emphasis on the marketing as being the Reinhard, did you want to come in?
Yes, yeah, so I agree with the staff analysis, and I also agree that it was important for the analysis, as Petrina said right at the opening, that the entity has concluded that there's one performance obligation and that this is being transferred over time. So, yeah, I don't have any comments otherwise.
Thank you. Tony?
I just wanted to just come back on the we've been a lot of talk about marketing costs, and I mean, I agree with something that the guy just said. I'm not sure that marketing costs drive the conclusion. It might be a piece of evidence, but the real issue here is the intention to sell under a contract where revenue we recognized over time, and maybe we could emphasize that and de-emphasize marketing.
I agree. So if I could just add to that to explain, we should change the words if we need to, but the whole point is, first of all, that marketing piece was simply a part of the facts that were given to us, so we didn't make it up. But secondly, what we tried to do, even in bullet D of the first page of the agenda decision, to link that. So this is not to say the on-off switch is marketing or not. It's simply this gives you the evidence to say the entity intends to enter into the contracts. Otherwise, there could be a piece of, you know, judgment or something there in reality that says, you know, it's a management decision about what they intend to do. But given that that was a piece of the facts that were presented to us, that fact gave us the evidence to make us a statement clear then that the entity intends to.
One question is concerned that to me. We talk about in paragraph 37, but are we then saying that if I have the intention to sell, but it's 2 years down the line, we're going to get a different answer?
Isn't the question whether it's ready to sell?
Yeah.
You stop capitalizing as soon as...
That's not what I'm asking. I'm saying during the construction period, are we saying that if I'm saying, yes, I'm marketing it ready to sell now, I can't capitalize borrowing costs, fine. But what if I turn around and said, well, I'm intending on doing that, but I'm going to stop marketing it in 2 years' time? Are we then saying...
I think it depends, Bruce, because I think it's right. It's about get ready. So if you want to, maybe to Guy's point, if you just... it's ready to sell, but you're just thinking, because I can't get the right price today, I'll wait 6 months or I'll wait a year, then that's not... It's still ready. I think that potentially if you have a practice and your business model is only to sell at a particular stage of construction or something, then that may be a case where you say it takes a period of time get ready for it.
So the point is 23 says you have to look at your intention, right?
Yes.
And so then you look at what evidence you've got to determine that. And one of the considerations would be what's going on from a marketing perspective. But I think maybe inadvertently, because it's in the fact pattern and because of the way we express 37, it's sounding more like
it's a marketing activity is a determinative,
which is
not
we need to be careful with that signalling.
My only concern is that substantial period is so well defined, you can see how this is going to become very judgmental.
And I think there will be judgment. That's a reality, isn't it?
It's the time period, anyway.
Yeah. Andrew?
It was, in fact, a bit of the same point, that if I read 23, the focus seems very much to be on the asset and what I've done to that asset. And so I just wonder how relevant marketing activities actually are. If I have an asset which is ready for sale now, but I decide that economic conditions are a bit depressed just now, so I'm going to hold off, that doesn't mean I capitalize borrowing costs. Because if someone came along today and said, well, I'll have it and I'll give you the price you want, I would sell it immediately. So I worry a little bit about having a hook as to when you intend to sell, because when I look at cessation of capitalization, it says the activity is necessary to prepare the qualifying asset for its intended use or sale. Well, if it's already prepared in a condition I can sell it right now, I'm done. So I do just wonder a bit. It seems to me that intention is there, but IS 23 is focusing on what state is the asset in, not whether you've marketed it.
But I think that the risk with that, I don't know that I necessarily disagree with you, but with the concerns fresh in my mind from conversations I've had, without that link to intention, which I sort of think of loosely as sort of what's your sort of plan, your business model, if you like, for what you're doing with these assets, I think some might argue that, in theory, it could always be ready for sale because there could always be a customer. Even though I've never in my life sold at this stage of construction and I don't plan to do it, in theory, it is something that's saleable.
Well, that's a slightly different question, because that's then saying, for this asset at this stage of completion, would I ever intend to sell it? And I think that's a different question. I was looking at this more in terms of the apartment block. So I've got 100 units in the block, and I'd actually like to pre-sell 100% of those if I could, because it's just all in the bag. It's all there. So I wasn't looking at it in the context of an asset where I would never, ever sell it at that stage. It is, regardless of what stage of completion I've reached, I would sell it if there was a customer.
But some would say that
in that case, I think the asset is always, if I'm an overtime model, it's always ready for its intended sale. Whereas if it is, I would never, ever sell this until I'm 25% of the way in, for whatever reason, then I can see there may be an argument. And if I'm not in an overtime model, then I can see that the period of time up to the point of sale or point of completion of the asset is important. But for the question here, which is clearly about overtime measurement of revenue and seems to be predicated on the asset could be sold at any time at all, I'm not sure marketing is that relevant in this specific fact pattern.
Mary?
I think I'm making another run at the suggestion I made before, but maybe just expressed a bit differently, is it's around this point that you've just been discussing to say something more like the entity has concluded that the item it is selling is the incomplete units in this, you know, in the stage of completion, because that says that what you are selling is the incomplete unit, and that's what then leads what supports the conclusion that the units are available for sale at that point in time. And I think, Sue, as you said before, the marketing activity is kind of evidence that that's what they're seeking to do, but it's not so much the focusing on the fact that marketing activity is happening. Yeah. It's the entity has reached the conclusion that the item it is selling is incomplete units.
Yep. Guy?
I'm not sure if this is saying something similar to what Mary was just suggesting or not, but I would have thought as intention being more about, is my intention to sell into an overtime contract or a point-in-time contract? That's what intention is about. And then having established that, mm-hmm. when is it ready for that purpose? And I think to Andrew's point, in these multi-residential units, in most circumstances, you're selling off plan before you've even put a shovel in the ground. And so it's ready day one. But the intention is more about, is my intention to sell into an overtime or point-in-time contract? And then the question is about, you know, when it's ready. And marketing, you know, might support the notion that it's ready for that purpose. But you may not need marketing to establish it's ready for that purpose either.
My first reaction is it's related to what I was saying, but it's maybe expressing it in a bit of a different way that runs a bit of a risk of perhaps going further than IS 23. Because you're kind of taking a standard that was out there before IFRS 15 was issued and relating the requirements in 23 to the way we think about these contracts and where they come together. And that's why I was focusing a bit more on the question of what is the item that the entity is selling and therefore what are the implications, because I'm trying to not connect too many dots that are too far out. So I don't think 23 says, do you have an intention to sell to a point in time or an overtime contract? I think 23 says, does it take a substantial period of time to get the asset ready for its intended use? Well, what is the asset that you're trying to sell? And so I think it's the point that the item you're trying to sell is the unit in whatever stage of completion it is, and that I was just trying to stick a bit more closely to 23, which just predated 15.
Young Sue,
a few people talked about the intention to sell a time, intention to sell over time, and they are different, but I don't think any difference between those two. If you think about the real sales of multiple units of apartment or the condominium, you know, I think the sellers would try to sell it at a time, all units at a time. But if the seller cannot sell all units at a time, then the seller will start to sell it over time. So sell at a time and sell it at over time. The intention doesn't that much related to, you know, what we are trying to do in the agenda decision.
When I was talking about point in time or overtime, it isn't at when in the process they might actually, start it, but rather whether they intend to sell it whether they are pre-selling a promise to deliver a finished good, yeah. or whether they are looking to bring somebody in as an owner to whom they'll start transferring control throughout the remaining construction period. Right. So that point in time versus overtime is not so much when do I think is the optimal sales point. It's what is the item you're seeking to sell? I could start before I even had the building permission to say, do you want to buy a completed unit in my building? So that's when the phrasing of point in time versus over time. You know, you can plan a 3-year sales plan, or you can plan to, you know, not start construction until you have it all sold. But this in time, over time is really more about what is the nature of your contract and what is it that you're seeking to sell?
Bonnie?
I'm skipping ahead to the next question, but I before kind of all of this discussion, I was curious to understand how the staff thought about the diversity identified in the outreach conducted in paragraphs 14 and 15 with the fact that, you know, the draft tentative agenda decision says it's clear how IFRS is applied.
Provides an adequate basis?
Yeah.
No. Principles and requirements provide an adequate basis.
But hearing this conversation, it perhaps even strengthens that question, because there's it seems like there's different views on how to interpret kind of the how the entity has decided that revenue over time, you know, what is the, how have they, what's the critical point? And maybe that's Mary's point, is saying, you know, we intend to sell the unit at whatever stage it is, because we're selling it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you apply IS 23? There's a lot of discussion about intention or not intention. And so I was just, I guess, how is the staff looked at the diversity in practice, particularly across jurisdictions, and said there's an adequate basis if we know there are different interpretations. I think the discussion here, there are different ways to look at it and how intention is evaluated versus not. So why do we think that it's clear? I guess when I read there's an adequate basis, to me it's, and I don't think
so,
it is.
I'll let Petrina answer that, but just before I do, I think, to me, a lot of the discussion is really around, has that I've been hearing, is around whether some of the things that we've put in the tentative agenda decision are overplaying the importance of particular factors. So, for example, the marketing, and I think it's a fair point, we're talking about intends. I think the standard clearly uses the word intends when it talks about qualifying assets. And then I what I'm hearing is a lot of clarity around the articulation of the fact pattern, and the clarity around the fact that this isn't a situation where your intended sale is the intended sale of something during its construction period, where you're in an overtime 15 model, and being clear that that's what we're honing in on, so that we're not inadvertently writing an agenda decision which is going beyond what the question and the sort of scope of what we were analysing was. So I think it's all good points for clarity. I'm not so sure so much.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we're trying to use 23 and applying it in a situation which wasn't envisaged when it was written by sort of
right.
definition.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
So I suppose I'd just say, Bonnie, look, clearly we do outreach and we find the input we get from outreach always very useful. However, by definition, we shouldn't even be talking about a question unless there is some differences of views in how you apply the rules. So I suppose I'd say is our analysis never starts from we've been told in outreach that there are different approaches applied, therefore we assume the words are not clear in a sense, because by definition, everything we talk about, there must have been some at least different views or different practice. So then when we go through and we do our analysis of the situation, and I think rightly the reason the question has come is that situation, there's now new accounting in IFRS 15 potentially, and people are then thinking about, well, what's the consequences in IS 23? And so I suppose when we went through our analysis, we felt that the requirements in IS 23 is sufficient to reach a conclusion in this situation. And maybe to what Sue said, is what I'm hearing is not actually any real disagreement with the conclusion of where you get to under the requirements in IS 23. It's much more the articulation of the facts. Actually, what we're almost arguing over are the facts and trying to make sure that, I suppose, they're as clear as they can be in expressing how and why we reached the particular conclusion.
Of course, Bonnie raises the right question, because that's what we're going to have to answer in a second.
Mm-hmm. But before I ask you, as a committee, whether you agree with the staff's recommendation not to add it to the standard-setting agenda, I think at least two points which were important to me in the discussion, which I'll flag, thinking forward to a potential agenda decision, would be I would be inclined actually to take out in paragraph the first D in the agenda decision to take out this marketing, because I think it's being too determinative, and to reduce D to the entity intends to enter into contracts with customers. I'd be inclined to say for the unsold incomplete units as soon as it finds suitable customers, so that it's more clear that the marketing isn't what's driving the analysis, and we're talking about a situation where, in addition to the fact that if you sell it, you're going to be in overtime, which is little e, your actual plan is to sell it during the construction period. Because I think that is what we're talking about, and that narrows us into a more secure basis of analysis, I think. I think there might be some other... If we go with an agenda decision, I think Patrina will have some other suggestions, but I just wanted to flag that, because I think that maybe helps a little bit with Bonnie's fair question. So... Oh, sorry, Michael.
Sorry. Just to, so this is just from listening, because I'm not an expert, as you know. On the marketing point, I guess what I'm hearing is that, this is based on building on what Mary said, I think that once you're in 15 on an overtime model, you are continuously selling whatever is being constructed. Okay. So to my mind, whether you're marketing or not is kind of irrelevant. So it's not even useful supporting evidence. It's actually not evidence one way or the other, because you're in over time, you are recognising revenue. You never have an asset that you are taking a long time to construct, because it is always being sold and recognised as revenue. That seemed to be what I was hearing.
I think taking marketing out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so with all of that, moving to question two. So does the committee agree with the staff's recommendation not to add this to the standard setting agenda?
Yeah, it's afternoon 13.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's the right question, Bonnie? Question three. So moving on to the proposed wording of the tentative agenda decision. So I'd already made one suggestion, which was to pare back the first bullet D, take out the reference to marketing, and make it clear that the intention is to sell
incomplete
units. Other suggestions. Now, the other point that I did want to just touch on briefly was Young Sue raised a fair point, which is... how substantive things are. And I'm a little bit torn on that one, to be honest, but it's worth discussing, because I think we always require things to be substantive. And I'm a little bit wary of putting it in this agenda decision, because I think in theory we could put it into just about every agenda decision. And also it would be adding in something which isn't specifically in 23, and we're trying to use the words that are in there. So even though I agree with you, philosophically, I think it's implicit in everything.
Yeah, I understand that, but you can see the wording of substantive in many other standards, like IFRS 10, voting should be substantive or something like that. So I don't think the standard will be say substantive in any way, in any part of the standard.
Okay.
So the other things I heard is potentially, and I think we possibly could, that in the second page, so page 14, bullet C, when we talk about the inventory work in progress, I think we could maybe add an extra, not change that, but add an extra sentence at the end that maybe just repeats a bit, but makes a better link to explain that it's ready for its intended sale in its current condition. Just repeat, because the entity intends to enter into contracts as soon as possible for and those contracts, which would result in transfer of control of any inventory for those units on signing the contract.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we'll try and make that link to explain, but whether widespread ready for use, they intend to sell, and as soon as they sign the contract, control of the inventory would transfer to the customer.
I think on that point, Petrina, it may be helpful to link that back to IFRS 15, that at the point at which the unsold unit under construction is sold to a customer, revenue will be recognised for the transfer of that unit to the customer. And that then picks up the point, it's ready to go straight away.
I just caution about doing that, because that starts pulling in all the issues that are in IFRS 15 about whether this particular contract qualifies, let's say, under the collectability issues. It's, you know, just it brings in a whole bunch more recognition tests. And the other thing, I think the point is the link that Petrina was making, which is why it is not a qualifying asset, because the entity is seeking to sell the item in its current state. I just really caution about that.
So I was just thinking, in the extra words, we literally lift some of what's in the DNA of the facts and just repeat that there, so there's a stronger link. So not create new words, but almost just create a stronger link between the facts into that bullet C.
I do understand the cautionary point. I would, though, observe that in paragraph E in the previous page, it's been assumed that we do meet all the conditions for overtime recognition. But I understand the point.
The only other point is, I know there was an open question about whether we should have the bullet D on page 14. Some people. Sorry, the D that says it's a B that should be a D.
That's why you were referring to the second B. Sort of special alphabet.
Must have already been thinking maybe we shouldn't have it when it's a second B.
Okay. Should we vote with the second B that should be a D and see how we go, or do you want to take it out? Try with.
Well, my proposal is to take it out. I think it's opening up questions and putting something in that.
I don't know if we need really it to answer the particular question that came in, do we?
Yeah.
No, we don't. Okay. So let's
take it out. I think it's going to raise questions, and I don't think we've really addressed
just it. Just keeping an A, B, and C. And with the modifications we talked about in the fact pattern, could I see a show of hands for the tentative agenda decision, please?
That is everyone, all 13.
Okay, thank you. Michelle, are you on the phone yet? No. Right. I think at that point we've earned our break. So let's reconvene at 5.